Hello, everybody. This is the Monday Night Pod. Tyler Fenske continuing through Psalm 54 here in the continuation of, more specifically, the relationship between David and Jonathan. We'll be picking up here in 1 Samuel 23, verse 16. It says, "And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this.' The two of them made a covenant before the Lord. Then Jonathan went home, but David remained at Horesh."
Yeah, so we were talking about just the really close friendship that David and Jonathan had last week and just all the aspects of that. This was the last time that they ever saw each other, was 1 Samuel 23, verse 18. And it's kind of a sad sequence from here when you look at it in depth, because this was the last time that they were together, simply because of just kind of almost misplaced loyalty here when it really comes down to it. Because they both have this shared vision, right, that David's going to be king over Israel, which is, you know, David had been anointed for that by Samuel, by the Lord, right? The Lord had sought out a man after his own heart. That was David. And then how Jonathan is fitting into this is he's going to be second to him, right? And you kind of imagine just the possibilities on what the two of them could have done together, you know? Yeah. But it all went awry because of what happened from here in terms of sequence, which is kind of sad. But, you know, because they're in a position here, like David says in 1 Samuel 26, where, you know, they're kind of waiting on things here, because David's in this process, right, where he's been anointed but not appointed. And he's going through the process of just becoming more mature, learning to be a leader, taking these men that are discontented, in distress, or in debt, and turning that into just kind of the foundation of his fighting force. In this period of just kind of waiting out Saul, because he has opportunity to kill Saul. And as he says in 1 Samuel 26:10, he says, "Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" Right, telling Abishai to don't destroy him, even though they had this clear opportunity to kill Saul, the king. Right? He says, "Surely as the Lord lives," David said, "the Lord himself will strike him. Either his time will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish." So now Jonathan's in this unique situation because he doesn't follow with David. Mm-hmm. The first time it happens there at the end of 1 Samuel 20, where they have this parting, and it makes clear to note that David left and Jonathan went back to the town. So that's the first time. And now the second and last time is where they meet then in 1 Samuel 23, like we just covered, where Jonathan goes home, but David remained at Horesh. Then you have this dynamic where David's still on the run for a while. Then he's in Philistine territory for a year and 4 months. This entire time, Jonathan could have joined up with David, but he's still with Saul, his father. Really just kind of complicated dynamic, but he's aligning himself with Saul, and that's what ultimately cost him his life.
Yeah, and the hard part about that is, so when they meet together, Jonathan is saying to David, "You're going to be king." Mm-hmm. And the tough thing about that sequence to me is, like, it's in order for David to be king, who has to not be king? Mm-hmm. Saul, right?
His dad,
his right. Own father, yep. Right? So it puts him in a situation to where it's literally like where it's talking about here in 1 Samuel 26, it's like, Saul's going to have to die, mm-hmm. Right? That's the only way David is going to become king, which right. He's been set to do. And so Jonathan, you know, like the point that you made tonight, he's in a place where he literally has to root for someone else to fail in order to walk into his own position that he himself said to David, rather than just staying with David and making that known from the jump that this is where my loyalties lie and I'm with you from now going forward, because so many people were. If you have to be in a situation where you're rooting for someone else to fail, you might want to reassess your standing at the current time.
Right. Almost the, like, in order to build my skyscraper, all the other skyscrapers have to fall. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just putting you in a poor situation. And I feel like there was many cues for him that he shouldn't have stuck with Saul. Mm-hmm. You know, tonight we covered, just going back to when the sequence of Jonathan eats honey.
For Samuel 14.
You know, it obviously starts off with the army is all but deserted Saul in fear of the Philistines. Jonathan's response, like we talked about last week, he had that same spirit of David. Who are these uncircumcised fellows, right? Where everybody else is shrinking in fear, he goes and attacks them. Him and his armor bearer kill 20, you know, scale the side of this cliff with his hands and feet, and kill 20 Philistines in this small area. Then the Lord sends this just fear on the Philistines themselves, a panic that the ground shook. The Israelites see the Philistines in complete confusion, striking each other with their swords. So it's going to be this massive victory. But then you see Saul bungling it right from jump, where he now says this, you know, curse upon anybody that eats food before he himself has avenged himself on his enemies. So as Jonathan says, the victory is much less than it should be, because the men are just faint. They're exhausted from trying to battle the Philistines, and they're not allowed to eat. Mm-hmm. Right? How much better it would have been if the men had eaten today some of the plunder they took from the enemies, would not the slaughter of the Philistines have been even greater? Jonathan says, my father has made trouble for the country.
Yeah.
Right? So he's seeing his incompetence there. Then the situation ends where Saul then is trying to have Jonathan killed because without any knowledge of his own, he had broken this oath, this curse that Saul had put down, right? And you see a lot in that sequence, if you read through it, you see a lot of just the same dynamic that Saul deals with David, where he just can't handle somebody else being successful.
Mm-hmm.
His ego is so big, he's so egotistical, that anybody getting credit or anybody having success around him, he can't handle that.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't respond well to it. So it's like you're seeing the incompetence, you're seeing just the egotistical nature. And I mean, that's just the start there. You see, you know, Jonathan is witnessing this whole dynamic with him and David, mm-hmm. right, where he's trying to kill David for no reason, as Jonathan says, mm-hmm. right? Jonathan reconciles them. This would be 1 Samuel 19. And then Saul then listens to Jonathan and swears to him, as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So David is now with Saul as before. That's verse 7. Now, verse 9, he tries to kill David again. David eludes him, and then he sends men to his house to kill him. So he's already breaking this oath. So he's not telling the truth, right? He's lying about things. And then in this anger over David, then tries to kill Jonathan himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's 1 Samuel 20, where, you know, he's trying to act like all, you know, he cares so much, right? You know, that it's David standing in the way of Jonathan's success, right? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established, right? So he cares so much about Jonathan. And then literally when Jonathan responds to that, Saul hurls his spear at him to kill him.
Yeah.
That's verse 33.
Yeah.
So right after he's, you know, I'm doing this for you and your kingdom, then tries to kill Jonathan in his anger, right? So it's like you're seeing it right out in front of you that this is probably not the guy, you know, obviously the dynamic of being his father, but this is probably not the guy you want to be in alignment with.
Yeah, for sure. And there was so, I think about all the, if you look at it from Jonathan's perspective, one, he's your father, so you grow up with him. Two, there's a point where it switches, and we referenced this tonight, to where mm-hmm. Saul did not carry out what the Lord said to do against the Amalekites, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where the Lord gets very angry, and the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord sent an evil spirit upon him to torment him. And so you see this switch with him. And all of a sudden, it's like all this anger, all this ego, all these outrages, all these fits of anger, all these attempts on people's lives. It's like just erratic behavior. And it's literally supernatural. Right? It's not just like in the natural. It's a supernatural thing to where Saul's literally being tormented by these evil spirits for a reason, right? Which is hard to deal with, right? That should have been a sign for Jonathan, like, oh, I'm going to go with the Lord's anointed, right? But you have all this playing a factor into that, right? And so it's like, a lot of times people can kind of have a nostalgia for how things used to be or have this grasp of how they figured things would have gone, right? Mm. Or you know, just trouble adjusting to how things are now and the information that's given to them now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they won't accept people for what they're really showing them.
Yeah.
Not only through their words, but through their actions. Through Saul's actions, he's not fit to be king.
He said it himself in 1 Samuel 16, right? Or 14, right? It would have been even better, right? So tactically, not the best fit. Tried to kill him, right? So personally, this is not the right fit, right? Maybe it was because he was his father and there were just loyalties there. But there were many signs, like you said, that it should have pointed to, you know, this is not who I should be in alignment with, right, going forward. And it's so sad because we come to 1 Samuel 28, and it's like, this is going to turn a whole nother way for Saul, not only affecting Saul, but because Jonathan made that decision, it's going to affect him as well.
Yeah, and maybe if you read through this, you know, you do see it even before David and Jonathan part the first time. This is not something that I covered tonight, but, you know, what you said there just made me think of, you know, I think Jonathan wasn't always fully grasping just how bad it had gotten even between Saul and David. Mm. You know, where David says, he's trying to kill me. He's trying to take my life. I'm a step away from death. And Jonathan's like, it's not so. He would tell me that. Like, I don't know, paraphrase this. He says, you know, he goes to Jonathan, this is David, what have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to take my life? Never, Jonathan replied, you are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without confiding in me. Mm. Why would he hide this from me? It's not so. Mm. Then David takes an oath and says, you know, there's only a step between me and death. And then finally, Jonathan is having to be confronted with the fact that Saul's trying to kill him, right? But, you know, even with Saul trying to kill David himself, and he sends men to his house, and, you know, Jonathan's not really believing it. So I think maybe he's, you know, maybe it's just the father-son dynamic, but he's definitely, like, not really seeing Saul maybe for who he truly is, who he's become, how south things have gone. Mm-hmm. You know, we did touch on that tonight because it's like, even through the sequence here, Saul still swears oaths by the Lord. He still tries to inquire of the Lord. He prophesies, right? The Spirit of the Lord comes upon even Saul, and he prophesies in the process of trying to track down David and kill him. Mm-hmm. That's the end of 1 Samuel 19. Mm-hmm. So if you're just going by Saul's words, even what he says to the Ziphites with what we were started with here in Psalm 54, right? The Lord bless you for your concern for me, right? Mm-hmm. So he's still certainly talking it, but his actions are saying something, you know, completely different, right? From ordering the priests of Nob to be slaughtered, right? In the entire village, right? To trying to murder David, to, you know, all the things that we've been talking about, right? You know, it makes you think of what Jesus says in Matthew, right?
It's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, they come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves.
Yeah.
By their fruit, you will know them.
Yeah.
You know, so, but as you were saying, things are going to go down. Everything related to Saul is going to crash and burn, as you see here in 1 Samuel 28, with the sequence here. So Saul sees the Philistine army, the Philistines assembled, right? This is 1 Samuel 28:5. So when Saul saw the Philistine army, he was afraid. Terror filled his heart. He inquired of the Lord, but the Lord did not answer him by dreams or Urim or prophets. Saul then said to his attendants, find me a woman who is a medium so I may go and inquire of her. There is one in Endor, they said. So he goes and sees this witch who brings up Samuel from the dead. And then Samuel says to Saul in verse 16, why do you consult me now that the Lord has turned away from you and become your enemy? The Lord has done what he predicted through me. The Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hands and given it to one of your neighbors, to David. Because you did not obey the Lord or carry out his fierce wrath against the Amalekites, the Lord has done this to you today, right? So this whole sequence was started because of his disobedience here, like you referenced before, where the Lord sent him on this mission and he did not obey the Lord. The Lord will hand over both Israel and you to the Philistines, right? So Israel itself is going to go down because of this. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me, right? So Jonathan and Saul's sons are also going to die because of this. The Lord will also hand over the army of Israel to the Philistines. So everything aligned with Saul under Saul's umbrella is going to be destroyed.
Including
Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Right? And that's what comes to pass then. Right? And it's such a just sad thing to think about, not just what could have been, but the final conclusion of, you know, Jonathan, who was just such a, you know, great warrior, and, you know, ends up dying from the Philistines, and they fastened his body to the wall, right? Mm-hmm. But it was like he had multiple, you know, he was given many opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, what the first parting with David, the second parting with David, then David's at Ziklag for a year and 4 months, that entire time that he could have gone down to David, and which I'm sure he knew was going on, but other people were doing that, including even kinsmen of Saul. This is 1 Chronicles 12, where men who came to David at Ziklag and noted that there were kinsmen of Saul from the tribe of Benjamin, so people that were, you know, aligned closely to Saul, who were still seeing the writing on the wall, making the right decision, and defecting to David, mm-hmm. right? And it's noteworthy, too, that it's verse 18 that, you know, that notes that the Holy Spirit was bringing this into unity and alignment with these people together, because that's where the Spirit was moving, right? The Spirit had departed from Saul, but the Spirit is moving with what David is doing, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, from the time he was anointed, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. So even though the circumstances weren't great if you were aligned with David at that point, right? We only got 600 people. We're on the run. Saul's trying to kill us. Yeah. You know, he had to act insane of the Philistines, life constantly in danger. But the Spirit is working things together, and it's starting to get, you know, starting to build here as guys are defecting to him while he's at Ziklag. And it said then, verse 22, day after day, men came to help David until he had a great army like the army of God. And this is the force that would turn from 600 into over a million. Later on, 1,100,000, that was the count that when they numbered the fighting troops, which is a whole nother story, but from 600 over a million, right? And then this was backed by the Lord himself, right? Where 2 Samuel 5, where they have this great victory over the Philistines after David takes the kingship, right? You know, David inquires of the Lord, and it's like, move out when you hear the sound of marching in the top of the trees, because the Lord has gone out in front of you. Mm-hmm. So it's until he had a great army like the army of God. Exactly right, right? Because in the physical, it's over a million men, and they're backed by the Lord, who's literally striking these armies in front of them.
Yeah.
Backed by the supernatural, and that's where all his enemies were just destroyed before him.
Yeah.
Right, where you can read, you know, 1 Samuel 18, and even, you know, in the conclusion there in Samuel, where, you know, it's just, he says he poured out his enemies like mud in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, the Spirit was moving for David, and Jonathan just did not get in alignment with that, with where is the Spirit of God moving?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want to know. Like, what does the Spirit want? Mm-hmm. What does the Spirit say to the churches?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what he was not hearing.
And can I be aligned with that? And that's what strikes me, is because I think if Jonathan just would have said, you know, the same way David is saying, bring me the ephod, and Lord, what do you have to say about this? Because he was in a situation where he had no room for error. His life was on the line. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, I think, was in this world where it's like, I'm safe no matter what. You know, or at least in his mind, he thought that. You know, it's like, I'm already in the palace. And I know that as soon as David gets it, I'm going to be his right-hand man.
Yeah.
You know, and he probably had no idea in his own natural brain mm-hmm. that he would ever come to that conclusion. You know, to where he would be included in the ruin with Saul just by being around him.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, if he
are you too close to what's going down?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so if he would have had the attitude of, Lord, what do you say? Right. The same way David did. Maybe he would have got that word and just stayed there when he had the chance. Right. And got to experience the Lord behind him and got to accomplish all those things with David. They would have sharpened each other to no end. They would have enjoyed, as great as their friendship was, it would have been even that much more to come, you know? And that's the sadness to me of this is it shouldn't have been that way. And they did have every opportunity. And I'm sure that ate at David, you know? Why didn't David tell him to stay? You know, like, just so many missed opportunities and what could have been. And that's just, you know, life in a nutshell sometimes, you know? It's life on earth, you mm-hmm. know? We're limited, we're human, but to the best of our ability, if we can get in line with the Spirit and ask the Spirit for help, the Spirit would help us.
Yeah, and the Spirit was moving.
Exactly, yeah.
Where, you know, these kinsmen of Saul comes, and David basically says, like, you know, are you here to, you know, betray me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Holy Spirit that then steps in with a prophetic word and brings it into unity, you know? Yeah. So it's just like the Spirit was moving, but Jonathan was not where the Spirit was moving, you know? Yeah. And it's just, you know, what we talked about tonight in just the terms of the aspect of like father, son, like was that what was, even though, you know, Saul, just the poor leadership and the incompetence, which Jonathan spoke to himself. So it's not like he was some dummy that couldn't see it, right? He could see how even that situation where him eating honey, how much better the victory could have been. And then Saul at the end of that sequence tries to have him killed over it. He says, I have to die for this? Like, this doesn't even make sense. You know, so he could see the incompetence. And he's seeing the lying. He's seeing the anger problem. He's seeing the attempted murder. He tries to kill him himself. You know, so it's all in front of him. And it's like, you know, was that what was keeping him around them, was just the father-son dynamic? But what we spoke to tonight was Matthew chapter 3, where 31, then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, your mother and brothers are outside looking for you. Jesus said, who are my mother and my brothers? He asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him and said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother, right? Just that aspect of redefining what family is, you know, where the kingdom comes before that, right? And that's Matthew 10:37. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Mm-hmm. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. We're in an environment now where, you know, Kid was referencing the church that he goes to. Remember the other day, he was talking about the church that he goes to. It was like some kid like that doesn't go to the youth group or something. And the parent had said, oh, he's like really busy with homework. So he can't come to the youth group.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure, like, you know, his phone time is, I'm sure, 4 or 5 hours a day, like every kid, right? Sure he has time. You always have the time for who and what is important to you, right? That's a terrible excuse. We all use it, but it's a terrible excuse, right? But it's like nothing comes in front of the kingdom of God. That's it.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing. Everything else is going to fade away.
Yeah.
So nothing comes in front of that.
Yeah.
Right? And that includes father or mother or son or daughter. And that's an important point because David is a type of Christ. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan here has just this almost decision of, is he going to go along with what daddy says and make daddy happy? Or is he going to go with where the Spirit's moving and go with David, who, you know, is a type of Christ, right? So there's a lot of lessons in that, you know?
And once you make that decision, that becomes the framework for every decision to come, and it makes every decision to come that much easier.
Yeah.
Does this align with the kingdom of God? Is this seeking first the kingdom? If you can frame it with that, every decision after becomes so much easier.
Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if Jonathan was just in a situation where it's like, okay, you know, do I want to leave my comfort zone and just be on the run with David right now, right here?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to just stick it out with Saul, you know, be in comfort and then make the transition when I'm ready? You know, I don't know exactly what the thinking was, but at some level, there was a fear of man, and that became a snare for him.
Correct.
So when you fear the Lord and you seek first the kingdom, that's the framework for every decision, aka where am I going to be? Who am I going to run with? Where's the Spirit? How am I going to run with the Spirit, right? If that's the framework, all of a sudden it's like the fear of men just goes out the window because I don't care. Men cannot touch me. It is the Lord who determines my success. It is the Lord who determines my step. It is the Lord who sets my path. And if I can fear and serve the Lord, all that other stuff is taken care of, right? So when I'm seeking first the kingdom, it doesn't matter if it's a close relationship, that would hurt. It's like the Lord is above everything. And if I can accept that, life is so much more simple and I'm that much more blessed for it. I can experience that run with David and the Lord behind us and not have to be pinned against the wall.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds extreme, but it happened.
right?
Right?
Fast
and those are the things that, you know, the Lord tells us, hey, fear me and seek me and ask for my guidance. I will give it to you. It's just, we're not asking and we're doubting. I mean, we're not trusting.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all been guilty of it, right?
For
where
sure.
It's like, oh, here's the, you know, schedule for the day and I got this and that going on. But it's just like, yeah, you know, there has to just be that, you know, realignment of your thinking around it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you joked around that before, but like you ask a Christian guy anything and it's like, oh, let me talk to my wife.
Yeah.
And that means no. Yeah. You know, that's like their little like euphemism for no, but it's like there's a lot of, sometimes there's lack of movement in the kingdom because people are just not prioritizing what's important,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And we've all been guilty of it.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
But it's like, yeah, it's, you know, Jonathan provides just a really, you know, strong, poignant example of, you know, if you're not walking in alignment with the Spirit and instead you're walking along with something where the Spirit of the Lord has departed from and you're too close to what's going down, you can get sucked down right into that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just around the wrong stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're around the wrong people.
Yeah.
You know?
And the most sobering thing is, you know, if we can seek first the Lord, seek the Spirit, and abide by the Spirit, it's like we can be spared from so many of those things, right? And we talked about what a blessing, you know, David and Jonathan were for each other. It's a shame when blessings are cut short.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the fullness of life that the, you know, I've come to have so that you may have life and have it to the full, have it more abundantly. It's like, if we're in step and we're abiding in the Lord, it's like, there's a guarantee of that. You know, the only way that we cut that blessing short and we forfeit it is if we start going by our own understanding, right? So if we can stay in step with the Spirit, you know, we give the Lord a chance to, you know, really walk things out to the full, you know, and I think we'd be all the better for that.
Yeah, so that's Monday Night Pod covering Psalm 54.